Hey everybody, I'm Bobby Salveson.
And I'm Michael Monaco, and together we are the Hazmat Guys, connecting the Hazmat community near and far with knowledge, insight, and real-world examples in an effort to make your job just a little bit easier and safer.
Now, let's take a minute to hear from today's sponsors. Hey, Mike, pop quiz. What is the standard go-to method for emergency decon?
That's pretty easy. Wet decon, right?
Well, you know, you're not the only one that may be thinking that, but it's actually dry decon.
No. How many times have I heard dilution is the solution to pollution?
Actually, too many. And that's the issue. Makes sense if you think about it. Without the use of water, we don't need to spend extra time setting up traditional showers or pools, and there's no wastewater afterwards. And you're not going to freeze anybody to death if it's below 60 degrees.
Check out firstlinetech.com/drydecon. Firstline Technology has a whole webpage dedicated to the methodology and links to plenty of dry decon resources. See for yourself why dry decon with FiberTech should be your go-to immediate decon solution.
With many major cities having nearby waterways, subways, and sewers, first responders sometimes face rescue situations where they must wade into stagnant water. Turnout and traditional rescue gear is not designed to provide protection from hazards and chemicals while submerged in stagnant water. Lion prides itself on making garments to keep first responders safe and is now offering a protection solution for these stagnant water situations. The lightweight one-piece FRS, which is flood response suit, protects against lower levels of liquid concentrations that may be encountered in flood zones or stagnant water where wading is required. The FRS is a non-certified hoodless garment with a special AquaSeal zipper, butyl wrist gloves, and neoprene collar to keep the hazards out. The FRS is made from Kempak, selectively permeable fabric by Gore-Tex Labs, which provides protection from toxic industrial chemicals and blood-borne pathogens while managing heat and body stress for longer mission times. When it comes to ChemBio solutions, Lion has your back. Let's get to the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to an incredible, incredible episode of the Hazmat Guys.
Yes. Award-winning,
sponsored, yes. Pulitzer Prize.
Critically acclaimed.
Critically criticized.
Yeah, it's even more right.
It's very much more right. Oh.
Yeah, I'm wearing my glasses because I don't know what the hell. My eyes are getting worse and worse.
It's the retirement.
Things are falling off since I retirement.
I went actually recently and I had to purchase a pair of glasses myself. I was reading stuff with fine print and I'm like, I can't see anything.
Yeah, it's all blurry now.
So yeah, up front is good. But hey, had a freaking incredible class up in Connecticut last night.
Yes.
Absolutely a great group of guys. Talked to somebody from the wet agent world was in the class.
Okay.
So maybe a conversation we could touch on a little in the premium, because it was definitely a very interesting conversation. So I would like at least the premium members to be able to hear what the exchange was.
Okay, then happy hour.
Happy hour, end of January, last Thursday.
January, which is 1, 2, 3, the 26th, it looks like, of January.
Yes.
1900 hours Eastern Standard Time. You can go on thehazmatguys.com/happy and get there. Our conferences, man, I know this is just getting longer and longer. Washington, February 23rd. February 28th, Wisconsin. South Carolina, March 17th. Oklahoma, March 31st. May 4th, 5th, 6th, Midwest. Cold zones coming up in May. Baltimore's in June. We just got approved for all those. And Massachusetts, we're bringing the heavy guns out for that one as well. And then I also think there's the New York State Hazmat Conference, which is in April. I don't see my list here.
I believe our good buddy, is Steve going to be speaking at that on his
Yeah, he's been doing aircraft rescue, which has been a huge draw for him, and we're very happy in helping him getting that going.
Yeah. So, if you have any kind of aircraft, and it's not, listen, don't sit there and go, oh, I don't have any airports in my jurisdiction.
If you have airspace above you, you should be in this class.
Because the class is not, it's not focused on airport fires. It's focused on, holy crap, there's an aircraft emergency in my area.
Yep.
And it's absolutely a brilliant class. It's very, very, very well done. Just so you understand, like, his experience and our experience, since 9/11, the New York City Fire Department has seen over 14 aviation accidents in its five boroughs outside of the airport.
Wow.
So
I wasn't working all four. No, I'm joking. I was actually a good amount of them. I was working.
Good amount of them. The mosquitoes fly out of the air. Yeah. Or helicopters fly out of the air like mosquitoes. All right. And if you are listen, we've got battery classes up the wazoo. But a class that is really starting to take off is our modular metering class. We keep seeing to get buildups of those and. So things are being booked through April and May at this point. Please reach out if you want to get in on the action.
Awesome.
Oh,
what are we doing? We're doing
we're going backwards. Back. Yeah, we're going backwards. And it's actually something I've been, I think subconsciously not wanting to do for a while because it's really hard for me to be like, I don't have a lot of input on this and I don't. And it's probably why I never really set up a good show to concentrate on it beforehand. But we did have a listener request that said, hey, listen, you guys did a really good job dissecting the first 100 minutes, that the RAD document from the federal government. He goes, my only criticism is that you only talked about the first responders, like the actual boots on the ground functioning.
Right.
Could you take this again from the point of view of the incident commander? And I was like, oh man, I don't think I could. So we talked about this, and the way that we're going to structure this is we're going to kind of run through the document from the command point of view. Now, I was never a chief. I was never, I know, outside of being like the highest ranking person on scene in the volleys, never had the job title of chief. But however, right. You have.
Ah, yes.
Ah, so we are not going to look at this from a large department point of view, right? We all get it. If you're a large department, you probably have somebody specifically dedicated to this task.
Right.
The question is the smaller departments, the medium-sized departments, the chief that may wear 15 different hats, how can he approach or she approach this document? Because this document needs to be approached before anything happens. If you wait for something to happen, this document is worthless to you.
Right.
From both points of view, right? As a technician and a firefighter, I need to already know my job and have sharpened those job skills, have practiced those job skills. Well, the job skills of the incident commander and any chief that's going to be plugged into this incident command structure at an incident like this has to be doing the same thing, but on a command level.
Yes.
Would you disagree with that in any way, shape, or form?
No, I think that's actually a really good description of how it should be done. And like you say with Steve's class, like if you're pretending that like airplanes might not come out, like I remember like we were talking, they'll never crash a plane into the train center. Like
never.
Stranger things have happened. And so like just the, I got a lot of feedback about our series on the first 100 minutes. And it was all like, I knew this document was out there. I appreciated you guys almost reading it to us verbatim, but it started the discussion of like, okay, if this happens, I know there's a document. I at least know where to read or get the document. And I might not memorize everything you guys said, which is I totally track with. I'm not a fan of memorizing anything I don't have to because I know where to find it. And so even in this case of the incident commander, there is two more what do they call phases, I believe, in the book. Phases. Yeah. And we're going to read the portion right from the book.
Right.
And then we'll discuss it. I think it's going to bounce back and forth because there's a lot of little nuance and interpretation in the short things that we're going to throw out there.
Right. And things that can absolutely help you. Now, if it were me and I was an incident commander, and I acknowledge the fact that I wasn't well versed in this document, because really there's a million documents out there, right? Like, yep. How are you versed at each one of these documents? I think I would pull it up, hand it to my next in command, and be like, I need you to read this right now and tell me what to do while I'm managing the incident that is happening in front of me.
Right.
Okay. So,
right.
We are going to start this off at phase three, because phase three is really the first time that incident command is actually kind of noted in the process. So the document went through based upon the fact that a radiological dispersion device went off, mm-hmm. and we are responding. What are your actions? So we're going to go through what is expected of the incident commander. Mm-hmm. And we're going to then backtrack on how we can prepare for that. So phase three starts off at the incident command post, or the EOC, is going to initiate the creation of an incident data map by plotting the locations of the explosions and the two initial measurements. This incident map can be created in any geospatial information system, a GIS, or mapping software that a jurisdiction chooses for information sharing and data management. So right there, that's the first half of the paragraph. But basically, it's saying that the incident commander is responsible for some kind of a mapping system.
Yes. So now, luckily, back in the day when this thing was made, I was just actually laughing about this because Wiser is going out the pasture.
Yes.
And Aloha, I don't know how it even stays afloat considering it's running on like DOS 3.2.
Right.
You know, and there's new kids in the game with this stuff, but there are like how you did this back in the day, you know, was very hard. And today there are so many tools to do this for free.
Right. Cause they're asking for something very specific. Right. And Aloha is plume modeling. Okay.
Right. But not the GIS type of locations.
Yeah. They're asking for you to, in order to share information with the greater good, to be able to take your readings and plug them into exact spots on the map.
Yep.
And there's actually pretty limited. And the one that's pushed the most is going to be the RAD responder.
Right. Which is just software you would install. Okay. So let me put on my incident command hat for a second. When I say, okay, I'm now at a scene that's established and I'm here, and now I'm required to start mapping out the location of the explosion and your first two readings. My thought is, who the hell has the location markers? Like, okay, I don't have a stockpile of iPads or iPhones or GPSs at my disposal for this possibility and minuscule probability of something happening in my district.
Right.
However, with the invent of the cell phone, everybody has a GPS. You just need the software. And basically every rig on the planet now has an iPad or tablet or, you know, a command phone or whatever. All you gotta do is install this shit and it would take care of it. So like RAD responder, which again, I think went to pasture and now is chemical responder.
Yes. Yeah.
It's been rolled into the same thing. Does all this crap and does all the notifications for you.
So as an incident commander reading this for the first time, right? Like you just made chief of department, you're going through this and you're going, okay, what would be your next steps to ensure that if there was an incident that couple sentences were checked off?
Hey listeners, the Hazmat Guys have some great news for you and your organization. We are really stepping up our brand of in-person training in addition to the great content you get on demand. Now, we know what you're thinking, but this is already incredibly great stuff, and how could it possibly get better? All I can say is, wait until we're in front of you. When we gather the best of the best from across this planet and even beyond, and assemble an instructional cadre that is seriously second to none. And now we have a ton of ways to help you, your team, or your organization get to a level that makes everybody proud. From subscriptions, on-demand, hybrid methods to full in-person goodness. You can contact me, Bob, at thehazmatguys.com to schedule a call and find a solution that works for you. And every participant of an in-person class gets a free one-year premium subscription, which sounds pretty good. So contact me at Bob at thehazmatguys.com and get some more information.
I would say, listen, pull up that that rad responder or chemical companion on your not chemical companion, chem responder on your phone, and it sounds like it's pretty much check, because as soon as the phone starts up, it basically puts the GPS locations in there, and you would just type in two other readings, dude. Even if it's kind of made up,
right?
It's at the beginning.
It's something.
It just starts the ball rolling. Like, yeah, I had one. I'm making up BS numbers in here, but again, it gets the whole thing going. So when you do this, and this is a pro tip from Uncle Bob over here, if you go and get Rad Responder or Chem Responder on your phone, and you open up and you're like, oh, let me play around with this a little bit. Be very careful, because if you go, oh yeah, right here in Granitzville, New York, we have 45 REM, ha ha ha. There are going to be three-letter agencies calling you immediately. Like, this is watched by the nuclear NRC, I believe it is, up in Washington and, like, you know, Cheyenne, Wyoming. And all. I mean, there are legit people that are, like, watching this. And if something pops up, they're like, are you doing a training? Because there's a training one.
Right.
And then there's legit.
Right. Like an actual.
So if you're going to test, make sure you're in the testing group. And try it out by all means. And they don't monitor that one. But if you say, "Hey, I'm in New York City and we have, like, you know, three REM that just popped off the East River," people are going to take notice and act, you know, accordingly. So,
and I think that should actually give some incident commanders some calmness, right? Some solace.
Oh, totally.
Because we're going to go through this, and it sounds like there's a lot on that department's command structure shoulders, but you would be amazed at how quickly help is on the way. And I'm not talking necessarily about physical help, but, you know, like you said, like, you type in 3REM, all of a sudden you're getting a phone call. Right. Like, there's your resources right there.
Right.
That's the time to be like, yeah, we got 3REM. I don't know what I'm doing. Help me.
Right. So it says real-time information sharing among responders and agencies, and the incident commander is critical to the overall safety of the responders and public. The data map will populate as protective action zones are established and additional radiological measurement data is collected and posted. One tool that can be used is FEMA's Rad Responder. Again, that's a little dated, so it's Chem Responder now. Tips for using Rad Responder are highlighted throughout the entire planning guidance in gray pullout boxes. More detailed information can be found in Annex 5 and Rad Responder integration. So they actually have a whole thing in this thing, but again, it's a little dated, so I would just go to whatever the hell it is, chemical responder now. And like every kid, if you hand them the most complex cell phone in the world, within 3 seconds they're posting Insta snaps.
Right.
It's like, it is not rocket surgery to do this stuff. If you can work a phone, you can work this app.
Right. And so it's the thought process. You know, when we talked about the firefighter, their jobs, we talked a lot about drilling and training and understanding what your job was. Well, if you're going to drill on this as an incident commander, this is the perfect opportunity to then allow those people, right? You come from a very small department. Your department is not handing out cell phones to all of its members, but you're turning around and going, hey, listen, guys, just do me a favor and have this on your phone in case we ever need it. And
it's very
then,
powerful.
Yeah. And then you have a drill where you're like, okay, everybody, this is the drill that we're doing. Please input the things, and then you get to play with it as an incident commander. They get to do their jobs and practice their thing. So here again, we're seeing how you have to take just a little bit of action beforehand to understand and be able to execute your job description on scene.
Yeah. And so then it comes into in the book is phase four is your next steps as incident commander. And I agree wholeheartedly. They are, in short, and we'll kind of tease these out a little bit, is get a public message out there.
Right.
Right. And then whether we're going to shelter in place or not. And you know what? Let's just do the public message. I'm going to give you two examples. And these are pre-canned. You can have these things, written out where you're going to say, okay, we're going to do this, and there are methodologies. I don't know how your locale is to do this, but you can get one of those like Amber Alerts where everybody's cell phone goes off. Hey, there's a silver alert or whatever.
And that's the question, right, for the incident commander, right? Yes, they have these prepackaged ones, and they're phenomenal. But as the chief of your department, do you know off the top of your head who to turn to put this message out? Yes, you do. Okay.
Yes.
How would you go about doing that? Let's say I don't. Let's say I'm like, hey, Bob, help me out here. I just became chief of so-and-so department. Where do I go to for public messages?
You're going to go to your OEM, your Office of Emergency Management. Basically, every freaking county has one. But those people are going to be able to tell you who to talk to. And usually they have the controls to do it. Like, for example, in my county, I know I would email XYZ at Nassau County OEM and say, I need access to this. Somebody would call me back and say, okay, what exactly do you need out? And it would be something like this. An explosion has occurred at location. Emergency personnel is on scene. If you are near the location, immediately move inside the nearest structurally sound building. Close the windows and doors. Stay inside until further instruction. If you cannot get inside a building, place your dry cloth over your nose and mouth and quickly move away from the area. Please stay clear of this location. Right. So clear, concise, small instructions. But from the instant, well, you know what? From any point of view, a person's smart and people are dumb.
Right.
Right. So if you don't feed them information, and if you're an incident commander or somebody that's in command staff, and you're going to say, I'm going to do shelter in place. If you don't consistently, I mean, like, very consistently. You can't be like, well, I'm too busy to do that show. If you do not give people information consistently, they will get squirrely and they will make your problems much, much, much bigger because they'll be like, I don't know what the hell's going on. I got to get out of here.
Right.
I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to do. And you are going to exponentially make. So if you think that you're overwhelmed, you are not staffed properly. Mm. And this is one of those things that has to be done. The messaging comboed with the shelter in place or evacuation has to be on point. And this has to be thought out beforehand where you're going to say, okay, if we have something, here's like 16 different ones. We have a chemical release. We have a biological release. We have a radiological. We have an explosion. We have this steam, da, 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 and have just the generic. And all it is to plant the seed for the guy to say, I get the message. Let me massage it into what we want. And let's get this out on the Amber Alert by our connection to the OEM that we did before.
Right. Because on top of, right, this is phase four. So before you've done this, you've already established your strike teams. You've already told them what to do. You're already starting to get information relayed. Phase four, this message is supposed to go out within 15 minutes of the release. Mm-hmm. So just to give you guys an idea of like how quickly the public needs to be notified, we're talking about within 15 minutes. And then after that has been, you know, taken out, you're going to have a population that is going to be sheltering in place. And individual jurisdictions, according to the document, must determine the best way to define the sheltering in place boundaries. So they're leaving that up to the authority having jurisdiction, right? You as an incident commander. So your chief of your department, how are you going to determine what your sheltering in place boundaries are?
Probably by the plume modeling or just like, hey, geographical locations or you know what? That's going to be, I don't know. I'm going to say that's going to be a kind of a case by case.
Right.
Where I'd have to weigh it out. Like if it's a little detonation versus a big detonation, if it's a, you know, what's the weather? I think there's going to be a lot of stuff in there. And the plume modeling that's offered by, you know, Rad Responder and even bite my tongue, Aloha, that kind of thing, or the new kid on the block, Ceres, are going to be a lot of the dictation of what we're going to do. But I think I have to think about how to say this because from the incident commander's point of view, there are going to be a lot of incident commanders that are going to be like, I don't have time for that crap. Public information is not my problem. Managing the incident's my problem.
Right.
No.
But it is part of the incident.
Everything's your party problem. Yeah. Right. Everything's your problem. And a immature incident commander would push this off as this is not necessary or not needed at this point. I have bigger fish to fry, as they would say.
Well, if you look at it from a scale point of view, what you're saying makes total sense, right? Because if we had a small incident and we had life in that incident, an incident commander would feel responsible for the life in the incident. The attitude that you're saying an incident commander could have is a failure to see that that incident is growing in its geographical boundary and size second by second.
Yes.
So yes. Them saying, oh, that's not my responsibility. Well, you don't even realize that your incident has grown exponentially. And
no.
There's no difference between the people in those boundaries than there were the people in the initial incident.
I've worked with some incredible incident commanders. And I will say the better they are, the more checklists they have. Mm. Like they will actually physically have a checklist saying, okay, a plane crashed. Here's your checklist. Because how many times do you go to a plane crash? Maybe once in your career? How many times do you have a crane that falls over into you? So there is absolutely no shame in the game in making checklists for everything. And luckily, they've done already. Like you can look up online and say, hey, I need a checklist for literally this document does it for radiation, but you can say I want one for an elevator emergency. And there's checklists for that.
That's a great idea. I never even thought about that from an incident commander's point of view, like just turning around and being like, okay, is this done? Yes. Is this done? Yes. Is this done? No. Okay, we need to do this.
Because the time to formulate that crap is not when the emergencies happen. Like you can't be nobody. And I really mean this. I don't know of any incident commanders that could off the top of the head recite everything for every event possible. I mean, yeah, they're going to be good at that bell curve. I go to these things 85% of the time. I have this banged out, man. I know exactly when to do this, how to do this, who to call. But those 15%, those edge cases of the plane crash, the crane derailment, the radiological, the biological, that is not wheelhouse. And if you don't have a binder with all those checklists, you're a fool.
Yeah, so that would be the very definition of that high risk, low frequency event.
Yeah,
yeah.
And the thing is like you can take that box and divide it into time to think and no time to think. Right, where we have the luxury of time and we can say, all right, let's think this out. And I'm not saying we're going to take a week on this or a month. I'm just saying, all right, listen, this can be done in 3 hours, versus we need to do something right this second. And I'm going to base it on some percentage of understanding, and we're just going to go with it. Mm. Like I don't understand any incident commanders that like, I don't have time for this, or this isn't a priority. It is a priority. You didn't prepare. Therefore you're failing.
Right. Right. And in this day and age, there's not even an excuse of, oh, what do you want me to carry around? You know, a binder of checklists, like everything can be put in documents into your phone that could be very, very easily accessed.
Yeah, that's a very weak tea excuse of why you can't be prepared.
Right. Well, join us next week when we start to go into the resources that are available for the incident commander. As of right now, we're going to jump into premium and talk about the discussion I had with a wet agent rep.
Okay.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Hazmat Guys. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel. And don't be afraid to use that like or follow button. Or
you can sign up for even more content from us at thehazmatguys.com. Here, you can subscribe so that we can connect you to even more great stuff. Your support is going to help us improve and build this awesome community even more.
Yeah, and if you want to get to the next level, you won't want to miss our premium content. Our specialist level provides you with access to our entire catalog of shows, which is now over 300, an exclusive Facebook group, premium video with no ads, and so much more. Also, check the Hazmat Guys University link on our website.
And don't forget, we are always interested in hearing about incidences or calls that you have experienced. We may bring you on the show to share that story. Reach us at feedback@thehazmatguys.com.
And remember, folks, don't just get on the job, get into the job.